I think Teal's Kim is most common the end of December, beginning of January, and during the month between Purim and Pesach, because that's when a lot of Kalim shopping happens. And both of them seem very technical, both Teal's Kalim and Hagalos Kalim. And at the same time that they are, in a certain sense, technical, and we're going to dive into technical details, I think it's also important to appreciate that they do put things into perspective a lot. And they are surprising injections of Kedusha. Before we get into the details of Teilas Kalim, which will be our focus tonight, the two major questions in terms of the halachos of Teilas Kalim are which and how, which Kalim require Tefillah, which don't, and if you do, how do you go about performing Teilas Kalim? Maybe to talk for a moment about the why. There's a very fascinating Yerushalmi that the Ramah quotes, and many of the Sifrei Halacha quote. Let's know why do we toll our kalim? It's based on, just in terms of where it comes from, it's based on Psukim and Parshas Matos that describe the Jews had a very successful military engagement with Midian, and now they're trying to figure out what to do with all the physical spoils. So in the instructions of what you do this, what you do that, Moshe sticks in, and by the way, the metal kalim that you've taken, you're going to have to toll. So in terms of why, yes, the Chumash says so. But what's this supposed to mean? And usually we think about Tumah as a way of removing something. Removing Tefillah as a way of removing a Tumah, but there's nothing anything really to remove. And the Yerushalmi says, well, think about a non-Jew who wants to convert, become Jewish. So one of the critical steps in the process is to go to mikveh. Go to mikveh for what purpose? There's no tumah that's being removed. An even more dramatic example, Kohen Gadol Yom Kippur. Think about the Musaf, and we hope this coming year to not just listen to the Musaf, but to actually watch the Kohen Gadol in person. But talk about the amount of preparation from Tzom Gedalia and on, the day that we call Tzom Gedalia and on. The Kohen Gadol is preparing himself for a week to become Tahar, to be ready. He comes to Beis HaMikdash, he's certainly Tahar. And yet he goes to mikveh, not once, not twice, but five times over the course of Yom Kippur. What's he going to mikveh for? There's no tumah to remove. And if he's Tameh, it's too late to become Tahar. It's already Showtime. So both of those are not tefillos to remove a status, but tefillah to inject Kedusha. It's a tefillah to add. It's tefillah mikadeshes. The truth is, just earlier today, I was learning on the phone with a group learning Sefer Achinuch, and Sefer Achinuch actually talks about the meaning of tefillah, which appears in this week's parsha, and it talks about it as every tefillah is an opportunity. It talks about feeling physically reborn. Achinuch actually has a fascinating idea. He talks about the symbolism of water, and specifically water in soil, as opposed to water in a bathtub. Mayim b'karka as being sort of like a return to the second pasuk in Chumash, Mayim al pnei tahom. So almost like you're experiencing recreation. The same way we have a mitzvah Leil HaSeder to, in our minds, re-experience Yetzias Mitzrayim. Every tevilah is an opportunity to re-experience Bria's Olam, physically rebooting. And Sefer Chinuch says the idea of that is you can imagine Bria's Olam, so you can imagine yourself morally resetting. So you're spiritually starting afresh. So it's an opportunity to inject Kedusha. So the Yerushalmi says your pots and pans can go to mikveh to get an injection of Kedusha, almost like a gear, almost like a conversion. A non-Jew goes to mikveh and now is endowed with Kedushas Yisrael. Your pots and pans, your forks and knives, they'll go to mikveh. You're forming under non-Jewish ownership, they'll go to mikveh, now they'll be endowed with Kedushas Yisrael. Tefillah mikadeshes. And the question, well, what does that mean? My pots and pans are Jewish now? My pots and pans are going to start davening three times a day? Pots and pans are going to start eating the sukkah? Well, what does that mean? I'm going to endow my pots and pans with Kedushas Yisrael. So it probably takes us back to one of the very first times that the Torah discusses halachas about eating, halachas of kashrus, and parshas mishpatim, the Torah prefaces it with the phrase "Va'anshe kodesh tiyun li." Kodesh Baruch wants us to be people of kedusha. The Kotzker has a comment. He says this is specifically an introduction to the concept of kashrus. The Kodesh Baruch wants holy people, anshe kodesh. He's not looking for halachim. The Moshe was playing halachim. He's looking for people who live lives in a physical context and who are going to, while people, endow their lives with the Kedusha. Not to escape physicality, but to figure out how to use physical parts of our existence as vehicles to do them right in a way that brings us closer to Kodesh Baruch. And one of the most significant ways to do that is eating. Eating is something that we share not only with all of humanity, but with the entire animal kingdom. Eats. It's a very basic biological function. Not good or bad, it's just there. That's what you do to survive. And a Kadosh Baruch, it's really a remarkable thing. Kadosh Baruch gives us the opportunity to take such a basic primitive function that we share with the entire animal kingdom, and it can be done so well that it could be done properly, a vehicle for connecting with the Kadosh Baruch. Because that's what people are. People are, we have bodies like any other member of the animal kingdom. We're primates, halfway. Because human beings are the one creature that are a blend of guf and neshama. We're the one creature that's neither fully physical nor fully spiritual. We're not opossums. We're not gorillas, nor are we malachim. We're a unique fusion of physical and spiritual. And so we have the opportunity to do physical things, but endow them as kedusha to do physical things and use them as vehicles to come closer to Kadosh Baruch Hu. That's, in the larger sense, that's the overall thrust of mitzvahs in general, to figure out how to do the things we're going to do, to eat and to wear clothing, interact with other people, all the things that people do, in many cases, all the things that any member of the animal kingdom does, but to do them with the self-discipline that Kadosh Baruch Hu asks of us, that transforms it into a way of coming close to Him. So that's, again, that's halach in general, and it's eating in particular is a particularly poignant way of doing that, and that's the Anshei Kodesh Tihunli. That's where, as the Kotzker said, as I mentioned before, the introduction to the how we eat is here's an opportunity to do something physical in a holy way. Here's an opportunity to grow close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we symbolize it so powerfully by saying the tools we're going to use to eat, the way I'm going to stock my kitchen and dining room, it's going to go to mikveh first. That's at Yerushalmi. Halo Davarhu. The way I'm going to eat, all people eat. All animals eat. But I'm going to eat in a way that's an opportunity to come close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In terms of what I eat, in terms of how I eat, in terms of how I preface my eating, in terms of with whom I eat, when I eat, what do I seek to accomplish by eating, what are my goals? It's not just, I'm hungry. Yes, I'm hungry. And yes, it tastes good and that's great. But it's more than only that. It's I'm eating so that I'll have the energy to accomplish X, Y, and Z. So we lay the groundwork for all of that kedusha potential by the tools, the framework, the background for all this eating goes to mikveh. The background for all this eating is, again, not to remove a tumah, but to make you uniquely Jewish, to endow with kedusha, to recognize the incredible potential. I know often when a Jew is meeting Shmiras HaMitzvahs the first time as an adult, sometimes one of the first mitzvahs, masyos, that they'll take on is Tfilas Kehil. In part because you do it once, and it can last for years. And it really gets you thinking about the fact that it's a simple act, but it's laying the groundwork for years and years and years of Kedusha in the kitchen and Kedusha in the dining room. So that's this simple-seeming mitzvah of Tfilas Kehil. So with that in mind, with this Yerushalmi in mind, this is a tefillah mikadeshas. That's, as the Kotzker said, an opportunity for it to be anshei kodesh, to be holy people. So with that in mind, it behooves us to figure out how to do it right, to think about what it applies, how it applies, and let's talk about how we can do it right. As always, I'm more than glad, and I've said this in the past, more than glad to take questions now, and hopefully the questions now, if there are any, will be merely the beginning of ongoing conversations about this and other issues. Oh, so let's talk about it. Great, great, great. So let's talk about
Sorry.
No, absolutely. You're getting to the heart of the issue. Like I said before, you're segueing perfectly. Like I said before, the two major questions are which and how. Which can require tefillah, which don't? And then if I know that the kli I'm dealing with does need tefillah, so how do I do it? So the first question, which exactly Meredith is raising, is, well, which kalim do, which don't, and why is it that so many Israeli kalim don't? So the Gemara, the Mishnah Gemara discussed tefillah kalim the very, very end of Masachas Avodah Zarah. And Gemara points out that the criteria for when you require tefillah kalim go back to the source. I mentioned a few minutes ago that the source of the Sin Chumash is in Pesukim Parshas Matos that describe Tefillas Kelim in the aftermath of the successful battle against the Midianim. And the Torah says, here's how you deal with this, and here's how you deal with that, and then in talking about all the different items that the Jews have retrieved, the Torah says, well, the gold, the silver, the copper, the tin, the iron, the lead, so it may need tefillah. Some of it goes through fire, some of it goes through water. Sounds like some is used in dry heat and some is used in wet heat, water. So the Torah says, if it's been in fire in the past, you'll put it through fire again. That's one type of, as an aside, that's one type of kashering, libun. You put it through, and you want to kasher a grill, you want to kasher a spit, you're going to put it through a heat, libun, a dry heat. If it went through water, so it's going to go through water again. That's what we call hagala. If you have a pot that became, that absorbed non-kosher flavor or absorbed chamistika flavor, not through dry heat, but the spaghetti was cooking in water, so that's wet heat, used for cooking. So you're going to kasher it by dipping it into boiling hot water, hagala. And the pasuk seems to say, and it also goes to mikvah. So the Gemara says, stop and consider that pasuk for a moment. So what do we learn from that pasuk and from the context? Three major conditions that a kli needs to meet in order to have the obligation and opportunity of tefillas kelim. Number one is the material. The Torah is quite explicit. Gold, silver, copper, tin, iron, lead. An obvious list of metals. So metals require tefillah, and that's in the Torah. The Gemara adds that midrabbanan glass requires tefillah as well. So that's the list. Metal and glass, yes. Other materials, not. So wood does not require tefillah, and rubber does not require tefillah, and plastic, according to the vast majority of poskim, does not require tefillah. In broyers, if you're of the broyers community, so I'm not sure whether it's a psak or they made like a takana drabanan. Some versions have it that Schwab thought that with a couple of decades, plastic would take over the world. There would be nothing else left. No one would make anything but plastic. He was not so far off, but metal,
scary.
Plastic has advanced, but metal and glass still survive. So whatever, some sort of takana within the Brewer's Kehillah. So if you're a member of the Brewer's Kehillah, if you go to the Brewer's Mikvah in Washington Heights, it says on the sign in the Kalim Mikvah, the Tovel Basin, it says that you Tovel glass and metal with a bracha, and you Tovel plastic without a bracha. You know, it's without a bracha because it's not halachically required. That's the practice of their kehillah. So if you're a member of that kehillah, you should follow that approach. But if you're not a member of the Brewer's Kehillah, if you don't follow Brewer's Pesachim otherwise, so then we assume that plastic is the same as rubber and wood and stone and pottery and any other material other than metal and glass. Only metal and glass require tefillah. The others do not. Metal requires minatora, glass requires midrabanan. Either way, you do, if you're chayav in tefillah, whether minatora or midrabanan, you do make a bracha.
For glass alone, you make a
bracha? I'm sorry?
For glass alone?
Glass alone, yeah. If you have glass, it requires
tefillah. Do you have to do it with something else?
I don't think so.
Like I'm literally saving stuff because I'm waiting for a soup pot. It's like I have a shirt. Something glad that I'm waiting for a soup pot.
Okay. So I think you can feel comfortable telling. I think you can feel comfortable telling. There is some debate about two items that from a materials standpoint are a debate. Are metals other than the six mentioned and China. As the Torah mentions, gold, silver, copper, tin, iron, lead. So until 150, 200 years ago, or maybe even more recently, those were the only metals that were commonly used for making much of anything. with the advent of modern technology, so now we have, I don't know how people have titanium pots or platinum pots, but aluminum does get used. So that was a machlokas around a century and a half ago between, I believe, the Vilna Gaon and Tiferes Yisrael, the more recent machlokas between Moshe Feinstein and Yaakov Kametsky, whether metals are not on that list require tevila. So usually, typically, if the only things you have to tovel is something that's, let's say, aluminum, so that's something you would tovel without a bracha. We'll get back to, we're not talking about disposable aluminum, we'll get to that in a couple of minutes, but just aluminum as a material. If you have a durable aluminum container, a durable aluminum cookware, so that would be a machlokas haposkim. The other issue is China. So there's a minority. Now, if you have something that's coated with a significant layer of metal or glass, that would require tefillah. So every once in a while you get like a craft item that has sort of like a plastic core or a pottery core, then they put a thick layer of glass, like that, like a half an inch thick layer of glass, that does require a tefillah. But China, the majority of poskim assume, right, China has a very, very, very thin glaze,
right.
Very, very thin, and not only is it very, very, not only is it minute, but also is not generally applied separately. It's from the sand.
It's
heated
with it.
Yeah. So the vast majority of poskim assume that China does not require a tefillah. And Grand Moshe David Tendler has strong words for a Hasan Kala who spent their entire Shavuot Brachas in the Kelim Mikveh. It's a school definitely to end up with a lot of broken china. That's for sure. And according to the vast majority of poskim, does not require, I would not total china. But metal and glass do require fields. That's number one. So the first hurdle you have to pass. Cording, Pyrex, those are all glass, right? Corel is glass. Corel is glass with pigment. It's pigmented glass, so that does require tefillah. When it breaks, you can tell that it's
yes.
It's just prettier glass. There are three criteria you need to meet. So the first criteria you need to meet is that it's the right material. If you have a kli, which is a blend of different materials, please reach out for a shayla. Depending on how it's structured and how it's built, it may or may not require tefillah. Sometimes if the in-between requires tefillah misafik without a bracha. So if it looks like there is some significant metal and glass, but it's a mix, so it's worth asking about that. But then...
Can I just ask one thing?
Absolutely.
Is it ever a problem to tovel something that's maybe a suffix if you tovel it with something else that needs...
No.
And you, like, not making a bracha on
there's
it,
no,
but,
there's
like,
no cost. There's no cost to tovel.
It's not... Like, you can never, like, tovel Lavatella or something
no,
like that. Like,
no.
It's... Not you can't error on the wrong side that way. Like if you tovel,
Electrical equipment, and as a result of which it's destroyed.
Problem,
yeah. Right, but there's nothing wrong with toveling a kli that does not require tefillah.
Okay.
So the Gemara says, "What do you mean?" So let's say I have a metal pair of scissors, not chicken shears, like paper scissors. Really, I have a metal bike. It's metal, requires tefillah. Where I says, "No, why not? It's metal." So the answer is you also need to have the right function because the Gemara says you can tell from the pasuk, the Torah said explicitly talking about metal, but the Torah implies we're talking about items used with food because it spoke about, well, maybe it's used with dry heat, maybe it's used with wet heat. But clearly we're not talking about bikes and scissors. That's what we're talking about. We're talking about something that's used with food. So that's the second criteria that it has to meet. It has to be a kli su'uda. Now, kli su'uda could mean that's used for eating food. It means it's used for serving food. It could be it's used for preparing food. If you have a kli that's only used for storage, which is rare, but let's say it's not used for prep, you have some sort of large glass container that's not table worthy and is not oven worthy. You just use it for some sort of mason jar that you use for storage. Actually, I'm not sure. Mason jar.
Sugar stored.
Right. That sort of thing is just used for storage. So that's a machlokes whether or not it requires tefillah. So that would be a tefillah misafik. Or if you have something that's used for prep at a very early stage. As opposed to come talk about, I assume you don't have shkita knives around your house. but maybe you have a meat tenderizer. Which something which is, in other words, something which is never used with food that's ready to eat. It's only used as a frying pan, so when the food goes in, it's not ready to eat, but by the time it comes out, it is. But that definitely requires tefillah. There was something like a meat tenderizer. It's only used with raw meat. Or I have, they talk about the if you've ever been in a matzah bakery, the rollers that make that perforate the matzah. It's only used with raw dough. Or if you have, let's say, a dough hook on a mixer. It's only used with raw dough. It never finishes the food. That sort of thing also requires tefillah misafek. So you would not make a bracha a dough up. You wouldn't make a bracha, and you would either total out a bracha or wait until you have something else that you would make a bracha and throw that in as well.
Is that like a can opener?
Can opener vaday does not. You're the second person to ask me in 2 days. Great.
I don't want to do it because I assume it touches the tuna.
Okay. So great point. When we talk about function, we mean number one, that's used for eating, serving, prep, or maybe storage, and in a way that's in direct contact. Let's say those metal grates on the stovetop. Very little food would get down the stovetop if there were no grates. Right? If you have nothing to lift the pot off, you're not going to have airflow, the fire is not going to work. So it's absolutely, those grates are absolutely critical for anything you're cooking on the stovetop, and yet the post can say, definitively, they do not require tefillah. That's the word tripod. Actually appears in Shulchan Aruch in that context. They say tripods don't require tefillah because, although they're critical to food prep, their function does not involve contact with the food.
So whatever you wouldn't eat it.
Correct. Right. So anything that's used in a kli seuda means it's used. It operates. It's used for making or eating the food in a way that's directly contacting the food. Can openers, the contemporaries firm point that based on the Shach and the Sadr Shulchan Aruch, can openers do not require tefillah at all for that reason. Occasionally, I mean, if you tip it, the can opener may end up touching the tuna, but that's totally irrelevant. It's coincidental, totally irrelevant to the function. So that sort of thing does not require tefillah. So again, if it doesn't come in contact with the food, it does not require tefillah. If it does, but it's used for eating, serving, or prep, it does require tefillah. If it's preliminary prep, when the food is still inedible, suffix. If it's used for only storage, that too is a suffix. Question? Yeah?
Just a comment. We recently got a gift of a decorative wine bottle cork. It's not made out of cork, but a metal wine bottle
stopper.
That's the word. So our son asked the Shaila, somebody at YU, and we were told that it did need, so that's because technically that's serving, like you put it out on the table.
Would the quality change if you didn't use it? Would the quality of the wine change if you didn't use it?
That is serving, right.
I mean, you can just as well put the original one back.
Well, okay, but you're choosing to use it. It doesn't have to be a critic. If I have a fork, I could have used a different fork. But I use this fork to eat food.
So the fact that it could be
that it's part used for, of...
So, right. Again, that's serving? Is that why?
Serving or storage, yeah.
But the bottle...
never comes in contact.
Right. It doesn't come in contact with it directly.
I'm not sure. Pot lids definitely assume they do require tefillah. Exactly. The idea of contact actually is when the Gaon points out Baruch Shachar, how do you know about this contact business? Like why shouldn't the greats require tefillah? Yeah, it didn't arise. So didn't say anywhere in the Chumash. It says something about food, or implies something about food. Doesn't say anything about contact. Where did that come from? The Vilna Gaon points out, maybe based on Rashba, says actually the Chumash did say something about contact, because the way in which the Torah implied that we're talking about a food device is because it said, well, it's the sort of thing that might need kashering. So the only time you need kashering is the fact that we kasher the grates, that's the Chumash, because sometimes stuff bubbles over. But whenever there's no contact with food, and you have one kli on top of another kli, the flavor does not transfer directly from one kli to another kli without some sort of fluid or grease, some sort of medium in between. So that, Vilna Gaon says, for the same reason that there's no flavor transfer, that's why there's no tefillah. Now, the lid of a pot, there is a concern of flavor transfer because you're the the pot is full of steam. So maybe the lids in general, I don't remember for sure. Lids in for cold things also maybe require tefillah. Maybe the same logic.
The oven racks have the same status as a grate on the stove?
So let's say toaster oven racks. Great question. So toaster oven racks, it depends how you plan to use them. If you will only be using them something to hold up the tray, if you always, always, always use a tray, whenever you're using the tray, so that's just a tripod. But if you plan to sometimes put food directly on it, so that already becomes, that's something that requires tefillah. And for Ashkenazim in particular, Ramos writes that even if you usually use the kli one way, but occasionally use it the other way, it still requires tefillah. So I have a knife that I usually don't use for food, but every once in a while I will. I have a Swiss Army knife, but 90% of the time it's for food. But I know some of you have sons who enjoy their camping. So every once in a while, you may, in a pinch, you use it for food. So certainly for Ashkenazim, that's something that requires tefillah, even though most of the function of that kli is not food-related, but if you can use it occasionally for food, so it has to be tovel. Then the third of the three conditions, the Gemara says, is the transaction history, the ownership history of this kli. It has to have, as was the case with the kelim that had belonged to the Midyanim until the Jews conquered the Midyanim, it used to belong to a non-Jew and now belongs to a Jew. Usually the change in ownership is more friendly and polite. It would be either a gift or a purchase. But it has to have previously belonged to a non-Jew and now belongs to a Jew. If either of those isn't in place, there's no chiyuv tefillah. So for me to use a kli which still belongs to a non-Jew, that does not require tefillah. So if you're giving a hechsher on a restaurant, so if the restaurant is owned by Jews, whether they are personally observant or not, in order to give a hechsher on that restaurant, all the glasses and all the forks and knives and all the pots and pans have to be toveled. But if you have a restaurant owned by non-Jews who are interested in running a kosher restaurant, a lot of things will be very complicated. One thing that's simple, there's no need for tefillah kelim, because it still belongs to a non-Jew. If I borrow a kli from a non-Jew, again, that's something that I would typically not do for kashrus reasons, but there's no concern of tefillah. Or the reverse. If it always belonged to a Jew ever since it became a kli, if there's a Jewish silversmith makes a becher, sells it to a Jewish distributor who sells it to a Jewish retail store, who sells it to me, so then there's no need for tefillah, because since it became a kli, it has never belonged to a non-Jew. Now you have to want to make sure that all those steps in the middle are
nowadays, with everything made in China or whatever, it's not so simple anymore, right?
Correct.
Just like some of the urns will say it doesn't require tefillah, but if you buy that urn on Amazon, does that still apply?
That's a good point. If it says doesn't require tefillah because it was... Right, if something was made by a Jewish craftsman and then sold to a non-Jew and then sold to a Jew, or for that matter, if you toveled kelim and then for whatever reason you run a yard sale and non-Jewish neighbor buys it and then some other Jew buys it off the non-Jewish neighbor, you got to tovel all over again. Right. So you can get there, you're going to reset there.
Maybe it was done by Jews, right?
Yes.
Can you tovel for someone else? Like, if I buy a gift for you, can I tovel it and put a cake on it?
Yes, I think. So you can tovel it once it has... So many Poskim are not excited about toveling merchandise. Because if I own a retail store and I buy merchandise... I bought pots not to use for food. I bought pots to sell. So many poskim say at that point it's not yet chayiv in tefillah. It'll become chayiv in tefillah when it's owned by the end user who plans to use it.
No, but if I'm going out...
So if you're gifting...
I go down on the table, I buy a plate because I want to make a cake and bring it on.
So if you're just going to tovel it and give it empty with a note, don't worry, it was pre-tovel, and that way you feel comfortable dropping off on a Friday afternoon, that's questionable. But what would work is if you tovel it and fill it with food. Because then you're already having the hishtamshus with the food. So you also have a chiyuv. At that point, as a giver, you have a chiyuv tefillah because you're planning to use it for food.
But if it's
as well,
put food on it, you shouldn't do it as a favor to tovel it for somebody.
Yeah, unless if you want to do it as a favor, so I would include some food too.
Right.
Not just because the food is a favor, but because...
Right.
because that way the tefillah is definitely appropriate.
Can I ask one question?
Sure.
If, let's say, so then a can opener, if it doesn't require tefillah, if you're in like a hotel or something, there's a can opener, Could you use a camper in a non-kosher context?
Yes, as long as you're sure that there's no non-kosher residue on the surface. In other words, there's no transfer of flavor. Whenever you think about kashrus between a kli and food, there are two questions you want to ask. You want to know, is there transfer of flavor? I have a perfectly clean frying pan. I used it for salami and eggs last night, and this morning I used it for omelet with cheese. So the surface is totally clean, but it absorbed flavor for last night, and now the flavor is being transferred. The other issue is there residue on the surface? So you're right, the can opener will not, there won't be any transfer of absorbed flavor, but there may be gook on it. So that's what you just want to make sure. But if it's clean, then if it's clean on the surface, then go ahead.
Question.
Yeah, sure.
Cookie cutters,
yes. Those are probably another great example of something that's only used with raw food that requires tefillah bli bracha. I think many of them might also be made of aluminum. So it may be a double bli bracha. Again, either tovel it together with something else which does require tefillah, bevadai, and the one bracha covers both, or just tovel it without a bracha. Well, if it's dreidel-shaped cookie cutters, and you know there's a straight line of Jewish ownership from, again, the dreidel-shaped cookie cutters may well have been made, they're probably made in China. But
by a Jewish company that owns it.
So that's a really good question. Who owns it? A Jewish company ordered it from a Chinese manufacturer. So who owns it when it's made? You got to look at their contract. I would total me suffer. Even if they paid for it before, it doesn't necessarily mean that they own.
It's still in the hands of.
They may belong. In other words, you ordered it, and then when they deliver it, now you own it.
Right.
Right. If.
You don't own it.
Right. Just because I paid for something, it doesn't mean.
You
own it immediately. Yeah.
What about a spoonless? A lot of people have metal spoonless.
So that should not require a feel at all. That's like your.
The thing is, you
right. That's your great. That's your great. Right. If you had metal oven mitts, I don't know why you'd have metal oven mitts. Sounds like a bad idea. But if you had metal oven mitts, refuah shleima, but they don't require it to you. Or glass. Glass actually is an incredible insulator. So if you somehow had like woven glass oven mitts, imagine that. That would not require a tefillah. So the kli has to have the right material, the right function, and the right history in order to be chayiv. And then finally, it needs to be what more recent posts can point out, Moshe Feinstein and others, it needs to be a kli. If once in a while there can be something which fits all these requirements, but it isn't even a kli at all. Something that's clearly not a kli is something Moshe Feinstein points out, is something which doesn't last. Something which can't last. He points that based on what the Tanam write in the context of Tumah and Tahara. Something that's held together by glue or something. It won't last more than one or two, maybe three rounds of use and washing. That is not a kli. There's a debate amongst the poskim. How about something that it could last, but we live in a disposable society. And we're not interested, it's so inexpensive to make these kalim, it's not worth my while to wash it if I could just throw it out and get a new one. So that's a machlok that poskim. If it's by choice, it's disposable, not that it needs to be disposed. I think the predominant view in poskim is that also does not require tefillah. There are poskim definitely who would call for tefillah there. And that's the question about aluminum pans. Aluminum pans which are used for kugel do not require tefillah, I believe, l'chalatias, because kugel pans, no matter how hard you try, they're not going to, by the third kugel, there are holes,
there.
Right? And you try to wash it, it's a racha v'tala. Pans are used for making challah, could, with reasonable care, be used plenty of times. So still, the majority of posts to that is the challah pans, disposable challah pans, that is, Majority poskim would say do not require tefillah. Minority poskim would say do. I believe Rav Neuber assumes that they do not require tefillah. This, however, leads to an urban legend which is important to dispel. And that is the grace period. One of the great halachic urban legends ranks up there with the you need two brachas for Mishloach Manos. That's false. The Rambam makes it clear the ideal Mishloach Manos is two types of meat. That's definitely not two different brachas. Another halachic urban legend is that you have to tov before the second time, right? The first time is free. So that's absolutely false. It's a misunderstanding of this idea. If something only can be used once, or perhaps if you only plan to use it once, then it doesn't need tefillah. But if that's because that's not called a kli. But if this is a perfectly usable kli, and I plan to use this as a beautiful glass bowl, I plan to use it for the next 10, 20, 30 years until it finally shatters, but I just want to use it now once, and I didn't get a chance to go to Kilmik before Shabbos, that it is a kli. It is a kli, and it fits all the... It's glass, and it's a kli suda, and it used to belong to a non-Jew, now belongs to a Jew. So there is no free first time. That's a myth, yeah.
So then when you reuse the old glass Snapple bottles,
that's a great question.
Pickle jar.
Great question. Reusing kalim. Reusing kalim is a great question. But Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva on that topic, which is a matter of some debate. He says, look, the Vlasic is not in the jar, business. They're in the pickle business. They're not interested in selling you jars, they're just selling you pickles. And Moshe says, from their perspective, the jar is just a shell. The jar is just wrapping. If you decide you want to reuse a jar, you just made a kli. So that's a kli that became a kli in Jewish hands. That's the Moshe Feinstein's approach. So not all the postcards are so happy about that because, in terms of...
You don't have to tovel.
So that's right. So according to Moshe Feinstein, there's no need to tovel because it became a kli when you made it a kli when you decided to reuse it. Some are more excited about that approach than others. Personally, I would recommend tolling it.
Even if going into it, you're only going to use it once. Like, you know for yourself, like, I'm only going to reuse this. Like, how many times can you reuse?
There are recipes that call, like, when you're at the bottom of a jar of something, like, make the salad dressing in there so you use the remainder of the jar and whatever. It's like,
but then it's not empty then.
Right, but I was saying that if you reuse that again, I don't know.
So Kozma, it's not empty. I think most posts would assume that you're safe. If you're empty, you want to reuse it. If you're empty, you want to reuse it, so then many would recommend tefillah. If you plan to use it once more and throw it out, and that's a common way to use these jars, and then that's the same as aluminum pans, that's a disposable item. If you have a jar, you plan to use a jar lo olam vaad, and not use a jar to hold pens and pencils, you plan to use a jar to store whatever, so then already, it's certainly yesh al mi l'smoch, not to tovel, but I think it would be a more common approach to tovel that. I want to be mindful of time, so let me speak briefly. We spoke about the kavana of tefillas kelim, and we spoke about which kelim to be tovel. I want to wrap up by briefly just talking about the process of tefillah, and then perhaps some other time, I'd be glad to give a shiur on Hagalas Kalim. And we were talking about beyond Pesach to begin to get into Hilchos Kashrus, so maybe Kashrus and Kalim is one of the more common questions that comes up all year long. So maybe we'll take that by a different time. Let's just talk briefly about the process of tefillah's Kalim. Unlike Kashrus, which is a physical process to remove the flavor that's absorbed inside the Kli, unlike kashering, tefillas kelim is an entirely spiritual enterprise. Tefillah b'mikvah, like we were talking before. As a result, it doesn't help to tovel this piece and to tovel that piece. You have to have tefillas kol ha'kli b'vasachas. When you kasher, you can stick in this part, stick in that part, just make sure over the course of your dip, so you covered everything. Tefillah has to be b'vasachas. At the same time, that's point one. Point two is As a result, you also want to avoid chatzitza. And then the question becomes, so how are you going to do that? So if I was going to stick the half a knife in and then grab the other half and stick the other half a knife in, so gevalik, easy. But you want me to get the whole kli wet. So there has to be one moment in time when the entire kli is touching the water of the mikveh, while at the same time, so then how am I making sure that it doesn't reach the bottom and become one of the sunken treasures of the kelim mikveh? So one of the methods described in Shulchan Aruch is to use a wet hand. They say that I have the right to hold it. If I don't hold it too tightly and my hand is already wet with the mikveh water, so there's a little bit of a thin layer of mikveh water on my hand, and then I put it in my hand, I'm not holding too tightly, I'm holding it loosely, so then that's legit. So you could either just drop it in and catch it below, that's one way to do it, or you could hold it loosely with a pre-wetted hand. My son Yehuda had a great point about the baskets. We went recently to Tovel, a set of flatware. So sometimes people want to save time by Toveling flatware in the baskets. Those baskets have the kelim. And the problem with the baskets is if you put in a few pieces, that's fine. You can shake it a little bit, and each fork, knife, spoon will have its moment when it's totally in contact with the water. If you load those baskets very heavily, then the shaking is not going to help, and the tefillah is not valid for the things that are in the middle. He pointed out the simplest thing to do if you have a lot of kelim and want to use a basket and don't want to keep refilling baskets, you know, five pieces at a time, just put the basket empty into the mikveh and drop your kelim in one at a time. And every single piece will have its moment when it's on the way down into the water before it hits the bottom, when it had total. And just drop them in one at a time. Don't put the basket down too deep. You can have 200 pieces of flatware. Start with an empty basket and just drop them in one at a time, and you're done. And you pull out a basket when you're done, and everything has been toveled properly.
At what point do you say the bracha then?
You say the bracha when you're about to drop in the first one. And speaking of bracha, so as none of you pointed out already, tefillas came as one of the cases of Shulchan Aruch where they quote this Tosefta Maseches Brachos, and you do the same mitzvah multiple times, multiple iterations of the same mitzvah. You only make one bracha, same as you're going to check multiple rooms in a house because chametz, or you can check the house and the car and the office, what have you, right? One, unless there's a very significant pause, you make one bracha to cover all the iterations of the mitzvah. Avoiding a hefsek is critical. Avoiding a hefsek is critical between the bracha and the first kli. And ideally, you want to avoid hefsek even between the bracha and all the kelim, which would mean ideally you want to avoid unrelated chit-chat until you're done. To talk about which kelim do we tell, a conversation about tefillas kelim is not a hefsek. That's relevant. But ideally, you'd want to avoid chit-chat from the bracha until the last tefillah, both from a hilchos bracha standpoint, and I would say also from a standpoint of appreciating the moment. We're talking about the significance of tefillas kelim. Why lose the moment with chit-chat when you can be focused on what you're doing? Sure.
If you're only toggling one thing, do you say
Al tefillas kelim?
You
say Al tefillas kelim. If you're doing more than one, you say Al tefillas kelim. It's important also when you say the bracha, you pointed out before, Tosu says, if you have an item with it, which is a chayv tefillah misafek, so tovel it together with something else. So when you show up to the kelim mikveh, it's important to think about what you're toveling first. It's true with printed mezuzahs also. That comes up less often than tefillas kelim. You want to make sure to the first item is one which is vaday chayv. So you want to think through all the criteria. Make sure the first one is one you definitely make a bracha, and then everything else, as you said before, no cost. Okay, something is misafik, you should tovel. Even vaday pater, that's fine. But you want to make sure the first one is vaday chayv. In terms of sending children under bar bas mitzvah, so the tevila is valid regardless of who puts it into the water. As a matter of fact, you could have a robot tovel kelim. You don't need human involvement at all. It just has to be in the mikveh. Or if they fell into the mikveh, that would also be valid tevilas kelim. So if a boy or girl under bar bas mitzvah performs a tefillas kelim, is totally valid. It's just that they don't have the nemanus to report that they did it and that they did it properly. So they need adult oversight. So you can't send someone under bar bas mitzvah to go to the Tfilas Kelim, but you can bring them along and they can help you. As long as you have someone over bar bas mitzvah who's keeping an eye on everything, making sure everything's getting tovled and getting tovled properly, so then you can have as much help as you want from whoever wants to help you.